Ping pong is one of the most popular games in the world. There are over 10 million registered players in China alone. And literally thousands of leagues fiercely compete all over Asia and Europe. What about here in the U.S.? Though ping pong may now be relegated to the obscurity of our basements, it was once a major U.S. sport. Jerome Charon is the author of the book Sizzling Chops and Devilish Spins, Ping Pong and the Art of Staying Alive. It took Steve Paulson back to the glory days of ping pong in America.
I was about the age of 10. I was in the country. And remember, you know, after 30 minutes, you knew how to play. It wasn't the same as ice skating, where, you would flop each time. But you could really learn how to play very quickly.
Or even tennis, where to have any competence, you actually have to have played a while.
Yes, but not only that, you had to have a certain amount of money to buy the racket, to rent the court space. It wasn't quite as easy, whereas every single park and playground and hotel had a ping pong table, so it was very easy to play.
You write about how you really got hooked on ping pong in the late 60s when you happened upon a table tennis club in Manhattan.
Can
you?
Yes, Marty Riesman's. I was coming back from Stanford University where I taught. My marriage had broken up, and so I came back, and then I sort of stumbled onto Marty Riesman's club. And he was just so nice and so generous, so welcoming. And so he immediately adopted me, as he adopted many other stray cats like myself.
In his prime, wasn't he known as the Needle?
Yes, he was called the Needle because he was very thin, and he was really among the two or three best players in the world in the late 40s and early 50s. He did not win the world championship for a good reason. The racket changed in 52. He never was able to adjust to it. It was a sponge racket, and so the sound of the game changed. And like many players before him, he couldn't really make that adjustment, even though he was young enough. If he had really wanted to, he could have.
You'll have to explain that. People used to play with those, the harder
with
rubber.
With a hard mallets. Rubber racket, with no sponge, with no layering. And then in 52, a Japanese player, Saito, wasn't even the best player on the team, introduced this sponge rubber racket, which looks like a sandwich. It's very thick. And what happened is that those people who played against him, like Marty Riesman, couldn't really score because the sound of the ball changed completely. I mean, it was very important to really sort of interpret the sound as you played. And the usual pock of the ball didn't happen against the sponge. So it was a kind of sabotage. And, of course, Saito won the championship.
Didn't the sponge racket also change the kinds of strokes that people would hit? I mean, there were different spins, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, changed the spin, changed the speed. It moved it from a defensive game to a completely offensive game. And also the volleys weren't very long now. It was serve, hit, and smash. And it doesn't lead to the same kind of drama that you had, let's say, during the classic matches between Riesman on the offense and Dick Miles on the defense. I mean, those were great matches. People would come from all over New York to watch them play.
When Marty Riesman and Dick Miles were in their prime, when they were battling each other, and
right.
Clearly these were the two giants of American
yes.
ping pong, what were those matches like?
They were astounding because they were equally matched. I think Miles was a touch better, at least in their one-to-one games. They were monstrosities because it demanded a tremendous amount of concentration. But you see, the difference was is that Miles was a killer. He was there to win. I mean, Marty was there to have a good time, to show off for the crowd, to make the beautiful point. And Dick Miles didn't care. He just wanted to win, and finally he did.
I get the sense this was almost like McEnroe against Borg in tennis, that Riesman was
yeah.
the fiery player and
yeah.
Miles was the ice king.
Well, it wasn't only that. It was McEnroe and Borg were both mythological players. They were both extraordinary to watch. You know, you loved it. It didn't matter whether you liked Borg or you liked McEnroe. You loved watching them play. And I was astounded by their matches. And to me, it's a kind of tragedy that in this country where success is worshipped, that there wasn't more attention to these two great, great athletes.
Now, there's a lot of lore about ping pong over the years, and one piece of it is a legendary point back at the 1936 World Championships in Prague.
Right.
And supposedly, I don't believe this, but supposedly,
no, it
this,
took
this
about
one point lasted 2 hours and 12 minutes.
And 12 minutes, yes. You had both players who were called chiselers because they never attacked, they only defended. And the whole idea was to psychologically wear your opponent down. Well, after a point of 2 hours and 10 minutes, they wore everybody down, including the referees and the audience. Everyone fell asleep and wanted to kill them. So they had to change the law, and the new law was that whoever was ahead after 20 minutes won that particular game.
But how is this possible? How could 1 point go? How could they just go for so long without anyone missing, for one thing?
Well, they played with either hand, and if you're not trying to score, you can practically play with your eyes closed if you're playing defensively. I mean, you're playing by the sound. And, you know, they were arm weary after 2 hours, but they stopped at eight. They ate sandwiches while they were playing. They talked. They played chess. I mean, it was a real family affair.
Chess? But this is the World Championship.
They were playing chess while they were while they were on the table, yes. Sandwiches were made for them, and they chatted, you know. So if they'd had cell phones then, they would have been on the cell phone.
Weren't they trying to smash it past the opponent?
No, that's the whole point. They weren't trying. And the person who lost by trying to smash and failed.
What makes a great ping pong player?
Well, reflexes, that killing instinct, that desire to win, or as Miles will say, the ability to read the ball, to read the spin of your opponent. It's a very complex game. We don't see it because we just hit the ball back and forth. But a really good player can, you know, control every centimeter of the table. He knows what's happening everywhere, and he's listening, you know. There was once a blind referee, by the way, in the 30s, who would referee games just by the sound of the ball, and he was supposed to have been the best ping pong referee of all time. I remember also playing Marty Riesman once when he had cataracts in both eyes, and he couldn't see the ball, and he just walloped the hell out of me just by listening to the sound of the ball.
You said that Riesman and Miles were both among the top players in the world, which
yes.
will surprise a lot of people. I guess I've always thought that the Chinese ruled the sport, but there was a time when it was actually
the Chinese weren't even involved. And of course, in the late 40s, it was only much later. But in the 30s and the 40s, it was England, the United States, and Czechoslovakia, and Romania, and France, who were really among the best players in the world. And then that changed in the 50s, and now nobody can compete with the Chinese.
Why did the Chinese become so good at ping pong?
Well, it was a sport that they could excel at because it doesn't take the same kind of brute force. I mean, it's the whip of the arm. So you can have a 135-pound powerhouse. But I think that ping pong was always popular in Asia. It is the most popular sport in Asia. Strangely enough, it's only the second most popular sport in China. The most popular sport is basketball. Don't ask me why. I couldn't answer it. But still, I mean, you have ping pong tables at every railroad station. You have clubs all over China. When you enter one of the clubs, you know, you might find 100 tables, people playing everywhere. I mean, it's incredible. I'd love to go there and play.
Jerome Charon is the author of the book Sizzling Chops and Devilish Spins, Ping Pong and the Art of Staying Alive. Charon spoke with Steve Paulson, who himself was a ping pong champion, on his dorm floor at Earlham College.